Hello everybody, welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page. Again, loads to get through in this week's show, including a highly controversial race at Worcester last week, a weekend of quality Group 1 action, and the latest in the rolling soap opera drama that is American horse racing. And here to discuss those stories, joining me, Lee Mottershead, are our deputy industry editor, Mr. Peter Scargill, who's in the studio. Hello, Peter.
Good day to you, Lee. How are you, my man?
I'm very well, so how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you. Not too bad at all.
Glorious news. And from his home, and in a very impressive studio setup, is our betting editor, Keith Melrose. Keith, you could be going into Radio 2 there, or, I mean, anything really. You're remarkably well kitted out.
I prefer to say I'm about to drop some sick rhymes.
Right.
With this microphone. But yeah, this is not that impressive. This was a garage 18 months ago.
Well, however it works, it looks great. And I have no doubt it will facilitate you to present our opening story in faultless fashion. The floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, so we start this week the only place we really could, which is the Hilson saga at Worcester. We have a horse here who was backed overnight, 10-1 into 2-1, drifted on the day of race, open sevens on the course, went off 11s, and got what was certainly an interesting ride from Dylan Kitts, who later came off the horse, said it had made a respiratory noise and hung badly right-handed throughout. Stewards have banned the horse for 40 days, and there's agreement been reached that Kitts won't ride in the time between now and the matter reaching a hearing at the BHA. So that would be interesting enough, but on top of that, we've had a lot of little strands come out subsequently. The trainer, Chris Honor, for whom the horse was making his debut, has come out and said he was instructed to have Kitts take the ride by associates of the owner, something the owner has since denied. So we've got a very complicated situation here, one that's only really going to come out in the wash once the BHA hearing comes around. So to my mind, there's a couple of questions here that are going to be tests for the people involved in this investigation. The first is the BHA should be finding out this truth or otherwise behind this story of who these associates are, who made sure that Kitts got the ride on Hilson in that race. And secondly, there's a little bit of a test here for the betting industry, I think, because the last time we had an instance of this was the Viking Horde saga with Charles Burns, where the horse was it was laid through a white label site with Betfair, so there was no way of tracing where the money had come from and the accounts that laid that horse had come from. Now, this horse has gone off at a Betfair SP of about 17.5 last week, Hilson. So it's pretty fair to assume that somebody, given the activity around that horse, somebody has laid that horse. Now, Betfair shut off access of these white label accounts to the lay function after the Viking Horde incident. So now we have a situation where there's no real excuse. Betfair should know who's laid that horse. So it's a test for regulation here in terms of how solid Know Your Customer is as a global entity, really. And we should hopefully find out what ultimately happens in this case and therefore help us get to the bottom of these two big questions, which can identify and pick apart all the various strands of this case, which have just got more and more complicated with each utterance from those involved.
Thanks, Keith. Yeah, really sort of interesting potential implication from this, in the sense that, as Keith said, this might be a different sort of investigation to the ones that we've had in the past. With that Viking Hall case, for example, no one's really ever been brought to justice for that one. Would you be more hopeful, Pete, based on what Keith has laid out there in terms of what Betfair can now do, that we should eventually get a fuller picture of what took place?
Yeah, I mean, there's gaps everywhere at the moment, aren't there? Who's booked the jockey, what the instructions were or weren't, who's backed the horse, what's the make of the price? There's so many gaps, as you would imagine with this, because it's all sort of been thrust upon us, an innocuous race on a Wednesday night at Worcester in the middle of the summer, and it's got all this stuff swirling around it. I mean, there should be access to the information that's needed pretty sharp, as you'd think. Like say, there's Betfair and other bookmakers have this agreement to share their data with the BHA, so that's no problem. You can interview all the parties involved. I mean, we've spoken to most of them ourselves, apart from the jockey, haven't we, for stories we've done?
Yeah.
And got a, as Keith puts, a tangled mess of a story. I mean, there's no clear story here at all about what it is. But it's a point that Chris Cook brought up in Front Runner. There's no real reason that this should be delayed for any length of time, as can often be with BHA disciplinary hearings. You know, people need to know and they need to know relatively quickly, you know, within the next few months what was going on. We can't have this dragging on for an extended period.
The situation with kits has BHA have hurried themselves up with that, haven't they? So assuming they are party to the agreement by which kits doesn't ride until any hearing takes place, he's been denied a living in the interim. So they've sort of put the top clock on themselves a little bit here. So it will be interesting to see how quickly it gets resolved.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a situation where you want a proper, thorough investigation, but equally, you don't want to be sitting here in 2 years' time and not know what went on here.
Yeah, but the time to resolve this is now, because it raises issues, isn't it? We've got an issue of the betting around the horse. We have the issue of the ride given to the horse and who was instructing who to do what. You know, these are not matters that are necessarily going to just stop with this horse. I mean, there's the possibility this could be going on in other instances, isn't there? So by resolving what's going on and understanding the timeline and where we've got to and who said what and why they did it, we get to a resolution, and then that resolution can be applied in other cases, can't it? Do you see what I mean?
I do, yeah.
We can't just say, oh, well, it's an isolated case, we'll sort it out in due course. I mean, this is a race that, you know, there's loads of them run every year, isn't there? Just an innocuous conditional jockey's handicap hurdle on a summer's evening. I mean, these races go, so we need to make sure that it's not a case of just getting to it in its own time. And for the image of racing and the reputation of it, because this is the worst sort of instance, isn't it? And all of the things that it implies, all of the suggestions of skullduggery and all of that sort of stuff that people quickly associate with racing. So by resolving it in a timely manner, that shows that, you know, we're getting to the bottom of these things. That's what we need to do now.
It's a good point you make there as well, Pete, because, you know, when part of the reason this has got the attention it has is because of how the ride looked, and whether that was due to breeding issues or something else, you know, we see neither here nor there. But in future, if we see a quick and robust process play out in this one, it does raise hope that next time it won't necessarily need a ride that, you know, looked very, very unfortunate in order to reach a speedy conclusion again in future.
Just in terms of the individuals involved, so you referenced there, Pete, that Kits has yet to say anything outside of the steward's room. As you say, he gave his reasons why he thought the horse ran as the horse did. Chris Honor, Lewis Porteous, spoke to him for us. He talked about I Don't Stop Horses. He claimed he hadn't been in inverted commas part of this. And he reported that he'd asked the owner, Alan Clegg, to remove Hilsin and one other horse from the yard, and claimed to yourself that that two associates of Mr. Clegg had asked for Kits to take the ride. You spoke to Alan Clegg, and just pray see what you found from him.
I mean, the summary of what Clegg said was, I didn't do anything wrong. I backed the horse. I've had horses for years and years and years, and I've never done anything. I've never had any problems at all. I'd also been loads of trainers. They all said, you know, they would have me back in a heartbeat. You know, I'm a good owner. I've done nothing wrong. And, you know, it's all very unfortunate what happened. I mean, we've just got this situation where everyone we've heard from has said, not me, Gov. I've got nothing to do with this. So the only person we haven't heard from is the jockey. You can understand he's 22 and he's in the eye of this storm. Mm. Inexperienced jockey that's been thrust into this position. Albeit, we should note that he did get a suspension earlier this year, a couple of months ago, wasn't it, May, for, you know, under running and riding as well. So, you know, that's a difficult position for him to be in as well, that he's got a second ride within a short period of time that's drawn attention to himself. So it's so unclear. I mean, I don't know what Keith makes of it, but I mean, I came into it, you know, I didn't watch the race live, I came into it afterwards. You think you get form an opinion, and then it just twists and mutates and changes, and we're left no further along. It's so unsatisfactory to be in this position.
It is unsatisfactory. And Keith, the wider point that Pete was touching on there about the why this is so important, and with your betting editor hat on, I suppose you're particularly important on this one. Racing has lots of issues, and you know, jockeys are punished sometimes for trying too hard, and there are various other things that people can fall foul of the rules over. But punters ultimately are the chief funders of the sport on a day-to-day basis, and they have to have confidence in the product that they're seeing. And in a wider sense, not talking specifically about this race, in a wider sense, if that isn't the case, if they do doubt what they're seeing, then racing's principal income stream is placed in jeopardy.
It is. Punters need to have faith in what they're seeing. I mean, to a large extent, I myself see a lot of things going on that I feel would have warranted further investigation and didn't get them. This case, I'm being positive, it's not like me, but my positive spin on this case is if we find a resolution to this case that identifies those involved in the laying of Hilson, that we can have a mechanism in place whereby in future these things can be pursued much more quickly and much more robustly, because we saw with Viking Core, we didn't get that. There's no reason we shouldn't get it now. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I go back to the two questions at the very top. The two things we need to find out here are who laid that horse, and in theory, we should be able to find out who that is. We also want to find out who these associates are that Chris Honor talks about, if indeed they exist. And, you know, you would hope something like phone records could give you that, but the fact there was two of them in Honor's story suggests that maybe it wasn't a phone call. So that muddies that water slightly. But the main thing, the absolute top of the shop thing we should be able to prove here is which Betfair accounts laid that horse, or which exchange accounts laid that horse.
Yeah, so that's a key question, and hopefully we'll get answers to that question and other questions very soon. Just repeat, aside from the fact that the jockey Dylan Kitts, there's been an agreement that he won't ride for the moment, Chris Honor and Alan Clegg have both insisted that they have done nothing wrong. In fact, the only party that so far has had a physical punishment is Hilson, who can't run for 40 days. He'll be twiddling his thumbs at home for a month and a bit. Time now to tell you that the Racing Post Members Club is a fabulous thing indeed, and there is a wonderful offer for you to subscribe. Welcome back to part two. We have been speaking about one controversial lower grade jumps race at Worcester. Time now in a very different sort of conversation to talk about three high quality Group 1 contests that took place over here over the weekend. And maybe more races if the guys want to talk about them. The Coral Eclipse was the chief event over the weekend. Only four runners in what should always be billed as the first Clash of the Generations. Isn't always the first Clash of the Generations. It was this year. We only had one three-year-old in the race. We only had four horses in the race, full stop. But that one three-year-old is a very good three-year-old indeed. And Paddington defeated Emily Upjohn in a fantastic duel up a Sandown home straight that was watched by packed grandstands and a really vibrant, upbeat feel to the place on Saturday. And the packed stands got the race that they deserve. For Paddington, who knows what he might do next. He's a winner of the Irish 2000 Guineas, St. James's Palace Stakes, and now a Coral Eclipse. He could drop back down next for the Sussex Stakes. Loads of mile and a quarter opportunities for him. Maybe even the Ark might come under the consideration of his Coolmore owners. The same day at Saint-Cloud, Westover got his first four-year-old Group 1 when posting a ready success in the Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud, and his Judmont owners would have been hoping for a Group 1 French double over the weekend. Chaldean Woods odds on favourite for the Prix Jean Prat, but he was well beaten behind a winner, Good Guess, who was hardly an obvious winner and would have required a very good guess indeed from punters to find him. Keith, let's start with you. What were your overall reflections of the weekend? I suppose starting off with the Coral Eclipse and what Paddington did at Sandown.
Well, Paddington's a sort of outlier in all this because the sort of other results chimed a little bit with the running theory that the British and Irish three-year-olds this season aren't all that. You know, the French classic winners have been much more impressive because they've probably not been beating much that's come over from this side of the channel. And, you know, Caldean, the worry with him is his USP was always how bombproof he was, how hard he tried, how straightforward he was. When he starts laying eggs like that, then that is a real worry. So the break for him is very much justified. You know, Westover was twos on. That Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud's often a race that doesn't take an awful lot of winning. But Paddington going into the Eclipse and coming out on top of Emily Upjohn, who to me, I backed her on Saturday. I thought she was the horse to beat in that race, does show that these top 3-year-olds are maybe going to be able to compete. But remember how badly Paddington was beating his own generation and how I think you would say that those two horses on Saturday, they shaped as well as each other. You know, Paddington got a little bit of first run. Emily Upjohn was closing at the line. She maybe is a little bit more of a mile and a half horse, but you couldn't say there's much in it between those two horses. I thought there was a good bit of distance in Emily Upjohn's favour. There clearly isn't. Those two horses are clearly very closely matched. So maybe the very best of these 3-year-olds, you know, we've got Paddington and the other one is August Rodin. So we await how he gets on when he goes up and tackles the older horses. But I don't hold out much hope for any other 3-year-olds, particularly going on and delivering against these older horses, unless we've got a slow burner coming through, of course. But among the classic horses, I think Paddington and August Rodin are your only two that are really threatening. However, Paddington has shown that he can clearly do it. You know, he's matching possibly the best mile and a half horse in Europe at the moment. Emily Upjohn, you'd have to say on that Epsom run, she's up there. So yeah, it's causing a little bit of intrigue for the season, but the onus I think is still on the 3-year-olds a little bit.
On those 3-year-olds, Keith, before I go to Pete, you referenced there Paddington and August Rodin. I suspect most people would probably say now that they think Paddington at the moment is a superior horse to August Rodin. I don't know what the lads would say at Coolmore. What about Ace Impact, the Prix du Jockey Club winner? I mean, he was extraordinarily impressive there. Got an RPR of 125 at Chanty, very prominent in the ARC betting. From what you're saying, would you not have a huge amount of enthusiasm for him taking on the older horses?
Sorry, I did start by saying British and Irish 3-year-olds and then I dropped it to 3-year-olds.
Sorry. You good caveat there. So you're a fan of Ace Impact.
Yeah, he is a very good horse and deserves to be where he is in the art betting. You know, we've got the equivalent of him last year, Vidani came over and won the Eclipse. And I thought we'd have said we'd won the Eclipse perhaps a little bit more convincingly than Paddington on Saturday, but I appreciate that's contestable. I'm a big Vidani fan and I'm probably biased, but, you know, he is a horse that's in the running for the arc. The older horses, what sort of are they putting up? We've seen perhaps the likeliest of them in Emily Upjohn get turned over, and that's without the complicating factor of the horse whose name escapes me, the really good Japanese horse that's coming over, who does genuinely look extremely good and perhaps might be the best horse Japan have ever sent over for the arc. So, yeah, it's a really interesting picture for the middle distance races in the end of the season. The King George is going to be fascinating. You're going to have August Rodin there. You're going to have King of Stars too. And it's a matter of who they come up against, because August Rodin, I thought, did exceptionally well to win the Derby. You know, people have gone cooling him a little bit because of what happened at the Curragh, but really, he did so, so well to win that Derby from a horse that we know is pretty good in King of Stars. You know, he's gone and beaten perhaps an ordinary division again in the King Edward VII, but he's beaten them very handsomely. He's no mug, and August Rodin has overcome the run of the race to beat him in the Derby. So the King George is going to be the race to watch from here on, and after that, you know, the Japanese horses and the French horses, their prep between here and the arc will tend to be a lot quieter, whereas we in Britain and Ireland have a full-blooded race in between in the King George in 2 or 3 weeks' time, and hopefully we see those horses there and we get a really full picture of the mile-and-a-half horses among the division.
Pete, the lads, really impressed with your work. They say to you, Pete, we'd like to give you a share in Paddington and we'd like you to plot this horse's programme over the coming months. Would you be going straight into the Sussex Stakes now?
We believe this is an option, do we?
Oh, I think it's highly likely.
I can get behind this idea.
Yes.
Yeah, I like the idea. Well, I was trying to think who he reminded me of, this horse, and I'm not entirely sure. But Rip Van Winkle,
yeah,
right, he was a very good horse.
Of course.
He went Sussex and then he went on to the Judmont, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, did he strike you as a mile and a quarter, like a proper mile and a quarter horse on Saturday? You were there, you saw it yourself. Was he quicker than Emily Upjohn and got a good position, and you know, getting a past horse up Sandown is quite tricky. Or, you know,
she was always following him. So in effect, I suppose you could argue he had first run on her. I thought he came off the bridle last. I thought he travelled better than any other horse in the race. And I think, although I've no doubt Emily Upjohn ran a cracking race, a huge race in fact, over a trip that probably wasn't at her, you know, not a peak trip, she'd be better over another two furlongs. I didn't feel that she ever looked like she was going to get past him. So much so that after the race, the two words, the arc, popped into my head and thinking, well, would they even think about that? Because at the minute, he's a brilliant racehorse, but I suppose you could say he resembles some racehorses that we've seen in previous years, you know, your Giant's Causeways, your St Mark's Basilicas. Would they try and make him that extra bit special by going for an arc? But then they've got August Rodin, you'd imagine, for that race. He's not currently in the arc, although that wouldn't be a fact. They could easily put him in there. He just seems very versatile. So in response to your question, did I think he looked like a mile and a quarter horse? Yeah, I think he did. But equally, a mile and a quarter horse who's got bags of pace for a mile as well. But would he say a mile and a half? There's a lot of stammer on his damn side.
Yeah, and I suppose they'd look to Cornwall would look to support the Irish Champions weekend as well, wouldn't they? Which will be important. Yeah. So would you go? Because he ran in a handicap, believe it or not, didn't
he? Madrid.
To start off with. Yeah. Then you've got the Irish Guineas, Ascot, Sandown.
Yeah.
And you want to run an Irish Champions weekend, and perhaps you want to win the Arc, which we've decided.
Do
take notes, Cornwall.
Yeah.
Because we're obviously laying out here.
Commercially, won't they also want August Rodin to win a mile and a quarter group race this year?
So we win the Sussex for Paddington.
Yeah.
We win the King George with August Rodin, and then go and win the...
Although they mentioned Luxembourg for that as well, Aidan.
Oh, God, this is difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
No wonder that there's so much discussions going on at Ballydoyle about what's going on. I'm more drawn towards Paddington as a horse than August Rodin.
Yes, me too.
And as such, I'd want to see him run in the Judmont International.
Okay.
All right? That's my vote. You can put it to Georg Van Opel and Michael Tabor and Derek Smith and John Magner, and they can see what they think about it. And then go on from there. And I think Tom Siegel wrote in his piece about Paddington going for the Arc, which sort of caught me out a little bit earlier in the week, the idea that he could go for the race. But I mean, why not? Why not? Send them all there.
Why not?
Send them all there, bring them all in and have a right showdown and long shot. That's the sort of thing we'd like to see at the end of the year, don't we?
Tom knows what he's doing there. He knows that horse won't run in the Arc. I can have a go at being Coolmore, and it's run them in the shortest race they can win. And when you see a race that you can dominate and nobody else has really got a runner in, you put in the horse that you want to win that Group One and build it around that horse. That's how Coolmore operate.
But now you say that, but Ika, I make the point in the column that there are a number of races at the minute where I mean Coolmore to an effect saved that Eclipse on Saturday, because if Paddington hadn't run in that race, I mean they could have run Luxembourg in there, but it wouldn't have been half as interesting, would it? The fact that they dropped Paddington into it unexpectedly, and nobody had predicted that, I don't think, after the St James's Palace Stakes, they really gave that race a boost, didn't they?
Yeah, they absolutely did. And the Eclipse is still a race that has, you know, certain associations when it comes to sire stock, and that's what they are primarily, you know, convinced. Yeah. And we, you know, we talk about they're going to give you a share in this horse, but you want a share in its ultimate stud value too. And in that case, you would say the Sussex is absolutely the race to go for in between. The thing was with Paddington is that he'd won that St James's Palace on his ear, and you can either wait 6 weeks to have a go at the Sussex, or you can have a look at that Eclipse and try and get yourself a nice win in, because we say it's the first time that three-year-olds take on older horses. And because of that, it's actually the most weight for age that three-year-olds will ever get in a middle distance meeting or a mile two meeting with older horses. And therefore, your precocious ones, and you know, a dual classic in St James's Palace winner pretty much fits that bill, they're going to be well suited by that weight for age situation. So it was a very clever bit of race placement. I'm not sure they did it for altruistic reasons. Oh. They saw the opportunity to win an open age Group One with, you know, real heritage. You know, the Eclipse would be top bracket even amongst Group Ones. So a really clever bit of race planning when they know they've got a horse that's in that sort of form. I think they'll try and win as many mile Group Ones with them as they can. They might see it that Paddington's a miler, Luxembourg's a mile two horse, and August Rodin's a mile and a half horse, but I don't know.
We'll all find out quite soon. We talk about St James's Palace Stakes in relation to Paddington. Pete, he boosted that form. the second, third and fifth from St James's Palace absolutely didn't do in the pre-Jean Pratt on Sunday. Good guess, an easy winner. Chaldean ran a pretty miserable race back in seventh. I was surprised he went into that one, because generally, if you win a 2,000 guineas, the pre-Jean Pratt is not on your agenda. You know, there are, we bracket lots of races as group ones, but there are great group ones and there are not so great group ones. And I don't think anybody would say that the pre-Jean Pratt is a race that people, you know, target from a long way out. I was surprised. Now, I just wonder whether Chaldean has got many or any other group ones in him. Am I being too down on that?
Well, I don't know. I think perhaps going for the Jean Pratt shows some muddled thinking from Judmont and Andrew Broderick. It's not a criticism per se, but he won the Guineas and he looked effective at the end of the Guineas, didn't he? He stayed on really strongly and won that race in honourable ground. And then he went to Ascot and they rode him positively again, and he got walloped by Paddington, didn't he?
Yeah,
he got well walloped. And then speaking to Barry Mahon, who's Judmont's racing manager, in the run-up to the Jean Pratt, they said, well, you know, Frankie got off the horse and said, "Gosh, you know, this could, you know, we could run this horse in the July Cup. He's so fast," which was in complete contrast to if you watch the Guineas, you'd think you'd be going for a Judmont International. So, was it he got well beaten over a mile last time. Going back to six furlongs might not be the right thing for him straight off. We'll go in the middle for perhaps not the strongest group one and see how he gets on. And it's sort of blown up in their face a bit. Is that a possible? Rather than it's all doom and gloom and it's the end of Chaldean and, you know, let's park him and focus on everybody else. You know, I mean, I don't know where you go with him necessarily after a run that poor. Yeah. Maybe you go back to a mile and say, well, he's proven over a mile, we'll go back to it. But I don't know, it's almost like the race at Ascot scrambled their brains a little bit, because he was so easily beaten by Paddington that day.
Yeah, what do you think, Pim? I mean, could you see Chaldean bouncing back in races like the Prix de Moulin later in the year after he's had a break and the QE2 or Breeders' Cup Mile?
Well, the thing with Chaldean, and this is only me drawing the only lines available to me and putting them together, is that he thrived on his racing as a two-year-old. So he wouldn't be top of my list for a horse that's going to benefit necessarily from a break. But, you know, that is just a position. I'm not a horseman. This is the sort of question that I would generally bow to a horseman on. But what I think you maybe saw at Ascot was you've got the Guineas winner and the Irish Guineas winner. One was heading up and maybe the other one's graph was pointing down a little bit. And yeah, the Ascot scrambling their brains thing might be a good point that Pete makes there. I think what occurred to me when Pete was speaking there is I think the incentives for running at the weekend for Chaldean and Paddington might have been a lot more similar than maybe we're giving credit for. You know, we've got a horse that's rolling here. He's won a Guineas. Let's try and get another first half of the season Group 1 into them. One that's traditionally fairly winnable, or the Eclipse isn't generally, but, you know, we saw the way that was shaping up this year. And, you know, try and strike while they've got the horse to do it. It worked for Paddington because he's thriving and going the right way. Chaldean, you know, he's going to be put in the evidence pile potentially, the way things are going anyway. He's going to get put in the evidence pile for that old saw about the Guineas being the last two-year-old race, because that's sort of what it looks like at the moment. But maybe the break will do him good. Wouldn't be top of my list to benefit from that. And I have to agree with the guys. He never really struck me as a seven furlong horse before this weekend. You know, maybe it's just that he's a one-paced horse rather than it's a very high pace he's got, because he is quite a big horse, isn't he? He's quite a tall and strides quite long. So it might just be that bouncing him out over the shortest trip you can get away with is the way to do things with him. But I certainly would be taking a watching brief on his next run after this purported break.
So maybe a watching brief on Chaldean, but still plenty of horses that you might want to be punting on over the coming days. And to help in that regard, here's some news on free bets. Welcome back. We have been discussing a jumps race at Worcester, Group 1 races in Britain and France. And now, Pete Scargill, we go to the US of A.
Yeah, we do, because you described in the intro about the soap opera around US racing at the moment. And it is a soap opera, and centre character, this is Bob Baffert, isn't it? We had the issues building up into the 2021 Kentucky Derby, and then we had Medina Spirit testing positive post-race, and everything that happened afterwards. He was banned for 2 years by Churchill Downs Inc. from having runners at their courses, and there was all sorts of legal issues afterwards, and you know, attempts to overturn the injunction, and lots of attorneys getting lots of money for this. This year's Derby was run, no Bob Baffert, but that was the end of his 2 year ban, and we all expected him to come back next year. Then last week, Churchill Downs, seemingly from nowhere, dropped a press release saying that Mr. Baffert will not be able to have runners there next year either, because he continues to peddle a false narrative around what happened with Medina Spirit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it raises issues in all sorts. A, you've got the continued almost toxicity around Baffert now and what he has, in the minds of a lot of people, come to represent in US horse racing. Whether or not that's fair is up for debate. But, you know, you see lots of people see Bob Baffert and they see a sort of racing they don't want to be involved with. And then you've got a guy that served his ban, he's done his time, and then they've gone, ah, no, that's not enough, we'll give you another year and see how we feel. Which again is, I don't know whether that's particularly fair regulation in that sense. I mean, it's done by the race course rather than an overarching group, but I'm not sure. But you give somebody a penalty, they serve it out even if they don't particularly like it, and then you say, ah, no, sorry, we should have given you 3 years in the first place. That seems a bit unfair really on Bob.
And that being the case, what happens next in this story? I mean, we now know that Baffert can't have any runners in the Kentucky Derby until 2025 at the earliest. But as you said, they've extended his ban without him really having done anything else in the interim to perhaps warrant an extension of the ban. Is it just going to be the case that for ad infinitum, Baffert can compete in certain states, but not in others?
Well, it seems to me, though, I mean, the Kentucky Derby is the biggest race in America, isn't it? Yeah. It's a lot of reason why people spend a lot of money on horses and send them to Bob Baffert, because he's won 6 Kentucky Derbies. He's the guy. It's a stallion-making race. It's, you know, everything that comes with it makes it a huge race. And by denying him that, that's sort of like an ultimate, you know, we don't like what you're doing approach to things. It's just that, you see, we've got into this position now that I don't know quite how American racing resets itself, because say you've got a trainer here who seemingly to people encapsulates the problems, you know, horses being receiving too much medication, permitted medication, but medication overages. We've had all the issues with breakdowns at Churchill. Issues with you know, anti-racing lobbies. I mean, it's such a messy picture now, and they're almost, I don't know, they're not managing to cut through it properly. You know, they're almost like Bob Baffert's sort of sitting there, and they don't quite know what to do with him. Because he won the Preakness this year with his horse. He sort of came back on, he won the Preakness, and it's great, but then they don't quite know how to deal with him, almost. And that's a bad position for the sport to have got itself into, isn't it? That one guy, the most successful guy, the most well-known guy, is also a massive problem for you, and you don't quite know what to do with that problem, and why.
And it's one of a series of problems for American racing, isn't it? You know, you had it this year's Kentucky Derby. That was playing out at a time when Churchill Downs was suffering a string of fatalities. The situation has become so grave there that their spring summer meet has been moved to Ellis Park. Another race within the Churchill, another race course within the Churchill Downs group. You had the anti-post, or the on the day favourite for this year's Kentucky Derby was scratched by official vets prior to the race with an issue. He subsequently failed a test as well. You've had issues in California at Santa Anita. You've got the perception that some within American horse racing are railing against nationwide efforts to try and change things with this new authority, HISA. It seems like a series of negative stories for the sport, with some of those stories being created by individuals within the sport.
Yeah, but things like that, HISA and HIRU, which is these great new terms, Horse Integrity Safety Authority, and the Horse Integrity Welfare Unit, that's Hisu and Hiwu,
rather
than some sort of Japanese poetry. They are trying to bring things under one roof, aren't they? And they're trying to do the right thing, which is worth bearing in mind. They are trying to sort things out.
With the support of guys like Graham Motion and others?
Yeah, exactly. People who can see the big picture here and know that America's out of step. And, I mean, there was a piece that Lewis Porteous did at the end of last month. And then he quoted the well-respected veteran US journalist Ray Pollack, in which he said, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you got, you know, politicians in California, for example, putting the future of racing on the ballot and making it a political issue. I mean,
that's the same way the greyhound racing has been impacted there.
Exactly. So they are trying to do the right thing. They are trying to get to a position where people see the care that's given to the horses and people's approach to how horses are trained is more sympathetic, perhaps, rather than, you know, training on hard surfaces, training hard and using medication to help horses keep going. But in the meantime, you've got all of this noise and all these problems with the likes of, with what to do with Bob Baffert. And, you know, every time he gets banned or every time something comes up with him, people are thrown back to Medina Spirit and his press junket afterwards where he talks about cancel culture and everybody was out to get him and all that sort of stuff. So it's whether this new set of regulators and regulation can get enough momentum and power behind it to blast away everything, isn't it? And get to a position where racing is solid again, or in the meantime, whether everything's just going to be such a cloud over the sport that it's too late.
Yeah. Keith, what are your perceptions of American racing at the moment? Are they pretty down, or can you see the situation rectifying itself then, all in the garden being rosy again?
It's hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't claim to know about American racing to all the ins and outs, but the issue of medication has been floating around American racing for a long, long time. It's not to say that it doesn't exist in other jurisdictions, but the way that American racing is run means that, you know, it's going to come to the fore an awful lot more over there. Baffert's a big problem in terms of his attitude, because he's got Usain Bolt's achievements, but Justin Gatlin's attitude, for those who are familiar with human sprinters, you know, the guy's failed, I think, about 30 drugs tests in his career and for medication, and, you know, those that is at least carelessness when you look at that, you know, and you would expect a little bit of contrition about, at very least, that those failures in husbandry, really. But there doesn't seem to be that approach. There doesn't seem to be that contrition about it. He seems to think it's part of the game. And the more he thinks it's part of the game, he underlines what people think about it being part of the game. This goes back a little bit to Hilson. People think the activity around that horse or Worcester last week is part of the game. And as long as the most successful trainer in America is saying similar, they're going to think medicating horses to the point where it's dubious towards their welfare is part of the game, and that's absolutely not what we want. That's what's going to be the death of horse racing if it comes, and it's a very difficult position to be in. Now, the thing is, Churchill have made that decision to keep Baffert away from the tracks because of ongoing concerns, which is fine and their prerogative. I dare say a national organisation wouldn't have had it in them to make that sort of unilateral decision. However, at the same time, the fact that we don't have any national running of the sport in America means it's proving very hard to get a really coherent strategy around, you know, medication and anti-doping, which the new organisation seems to be doing a decent job of, but the jurisdiction they have is limited because of the sort of decentralised way American racing's run. So we're seeing the sort of pluses and minuses of decentralised administration of a sport here, and you know that is one of the most interesting things to get through. I mean, there's only so much we can do about Bob Baffert's attitudes, but in terms of how America's and racing's run, I think we see both the sort of shortcomings and the potential sort of benefits of having a sport that's run the way it is.
Yeah, no doubt these are difficult times for American racing. That said, there are still some amazing things about the sport over there. One of them is Santa Anita Racecourse, and we can offer you the chance to win a free holiday to the Breeders' Cup Bing Stakes this year in front of the San Gabriel Mountains. Here's how you might win it. Okay, good luck then with that holiday competition. It might be you. You might be the winner. There will be a winner of this week's front page. I spoke about the big Group 1 racing at the weekend, which was fantastic, but we had big Group 1s in the past and we'll have big Group 1s in the future. So I'm not sure I can necessarily promote myself to the top here. Peter Scargill, you made a very impressive case for the situation in American racing and the situation regarding big Bob Baffert. And I was mightily impressed. But Keith Melrose, it would be surprising, would it not, if given all your fine equipment there and given the story that you presented has been the big story of the last week, one that is set to run and run. It would be a surprise if you were not the winner this week, and you are the winner this week. Congratulations.
Thanks very much, Lee. I hate to think that I've bought the prize with my fancy microphone. But it's not also a prize I feel like celebrating, but I really just hope this situation gets resolved satisfactorily, because it's a sorry episode, but it's also an opportunity for racing.
Yeah, and I love the fact that we are ending on a positive, upbeat note in that regard. And in that regard, and in all regards, I say thank you to Keith Melrose. I say thank you to Pete Scargill.
Pleasure as always.
I say thank you to you for watching. Tom Kerr will be in this chair next week. Join him then. And until then, it's bye-bye.